Welcome to the Gab and Jules show. Although today, it's not the Gab and Jules, it's the Nadim and Jules show.
There you go. Sounds good, huh?
Man, I'm very excited.
Very yeah, me too. I never thought I'd be filling in for Gabriel Marcotti, but still, here I am, and I'm good to go.
This is going to be perfect. There's a big show for us. We're going to talk about the Nations League, of course,
yes.
France and Spain in the final, even if we want a little bit of the third and fourth playoff final.
Mm-hmm.
We've got England, the Ballon d'Or, the young Ballon d'Or, plenty of quick hits too. And to help us dissect this Nations League final, we'll have Franck Leboeuf with us.
Only the best.
Our own World Cup winner. Frankie, let's start with you. There was not really much for, an hour in that game. First half, even if Spain had a lot of the ball, was quite close, really. He opened up very much once Theo Hernandez made that big chance. Oyarzabal scored the goal. What did you make of that performance overall of that game?
Well, hi. First, hi to everyone. I think I was quite disappointed, like I was during the semifinal for an hour. Like I found, and we talked on that on the ESPN FC show, you quite liked the performance of France the first hour, and the semifinal, I was pretty disappointed. Because when they want to wake up and they want to play their football, you see the huge difference they can make against any opponent. It worked against Belgium. It worked yesterday against Spain as well, where suddenly when those players, the main players, Benzema, Mbappe, start playing their football, and we'll put Pogba as well, Hernandez as well, when they start playing their football, there is no way they can lose a game. And this is what happened again during that final, where they needed to concede a goal to wake up and then to show their strength. So it's, in a way, comforting my thought about that team, which I think is one of the best teams in the world, who can beat anybody. But they need a little something, you know, to wake up. And it can be tricky in the future if they carry on like that, because one day they couldn't find the solution. So they have to to be a little bit more professional, I would say, because we know that they are so talented that it can do the difference.
Mm. Do you not think, though, with that game, Spain wants to control the game through possession? This is whether you're seeing Spain under 10s or like Spain first team. That's just how they play.
Yeah.
So for France, do you think they could have been more front foot in that first 60 minutes? But to be honest, the thing that I like about France, and it's possibly the question you've got to ask, are they better when the game becomes more open? Because then you have more space for those people up front and so on. Because, like I say, with Spain, how many teams are going to play against Spain and not appear passive? But it's not because they are passive. It's because that's what Spain do. And when you looked at it, before that first goal was scored, I think Spain only had 3 shots on goal. So although France weren't, say, at their imperious best, they kind of limited Spain, did they not? Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, for me, this was vintage France 2018, the way they won the World Cup. Same. You don't have the ball, you don't care, you give them the ball, but then you control the defensive spaces so well and you play a quick transition football, like the Mbappe goal, Benzema in a way as well, like they did in the second half against Belgium, like Frankie was saying. I've got no issue with it, but I can see why people, and Frank and I have discussed it many times, what maybe with those players, there should be playing better football.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you put Pep Guardiola on that bench or Jurgen Klopp, and this French team plays much better football, are more proactive than reactive, like they've been really the last few months. And maybe it's a different team. Would they win? I'm not sure.
Mm.
But could they play better? I think they could, in a way.
Mm. Frankie, what do you think?
Yes, I totally agree with that. But I warned Didier before the Euro, well, through the television and then our show, so I'm not sure he listened to us, which is a shame for
I'm
him.
I'm sure he does.
But I said, you know, in 2002, when we went to the World Cup, it was a disaster because the coach kept some players like myself, and I have to be truthful about that. We were maybe too old. Or won too many things to be challenged another time, and I said to on television that Didier should maybe get rid of some players who are not competitive anymore to go to another World Cup, to the Euro before, to another World Cup. I'm very questioning the talent right now of Griezmann, like I'm questioning the talent of Varane. We could have said the same about Lloris the first game, the semi-final, but he played a fantastic game yesterday and saved, so I guess he's still there. But the two others, I'm sorry. The awesome question. Pogba showed us, showed to the world that he's very important to the national team. He did the job. Semi-final, final, fantastic player. Benzema came back and does the job every time, even if it's only half an hour. It's good enough for him and for us. But Griezmann, I think he should, you know, maybe not even call him. You know, just for him to go back to Atletico to get back to his own confidence, because his performance are not good enough right now. And that's my main concern, because he wants to put Griezmann as a leader where there are other leaders, and maybe at a certain point could put some troubles into the squad.
We'll talk about Griezmann in a bit in our podcast, but the big controversy, of course, in the final is the winning goal from Mbappe. And if you haven't watched it, it's a through ball from Theo Hernandez. Mbappe is offside, just behind Eric Garcia. But Eric Garcia goes to play the ball, touches a little bit the ball, which means that Mbappe didn't become onside again. Mm-hmm. And then he finishes, and that's why the goal was given.
Yeah.
As you two, as former defenders, if you're Eric Garcia, did he do the right thing? Does he have to go for the ball, or can he just let the ball roll and Mbappe is offside and then the referee gives it and it's no goal?
For me, he has 100% has to play for the ball. He has to do it because he's sensing that danger, which is why he tried to play for the ball. He's tried to stop it. But I've suffered from this rule before, and it's very, very strange to get your mind around, because I think in times gone by, say if there was no video, the linesman will see the player play the ball through and they'll see a player that's standing offside. And the linesman won't wait to see if the defender tries to play it or touch it. He'll put his flag up. And more often than not, they won't then have a conversation with the referee to see, well, did this happen or did that happen? Yeah. It's like, it's usually just offside. But I think it's a very, very tough thing as a defender to be able to deal with, because you are reacting based on the things that are around you. And you can never sense 100% that somebody is onside or offside. And you have to play to the whistle. So even if, like, you think, more maybe, you have to take it seriously. Yeah. And I would wait. And I would say as well, the different big thing for me with this law, If somebody's standing in an offside position and a shot comes towards goal and they say it affected the goalkeeper's sight, they'll take the goal away. The only reason that he played for the ball the way that he did is because there was somebody affecting him and that guy happened to be offside.
Exactly.
So how can the two things be so different when, with the defender and the goalkeeper, we are reacting to it? But, you know, I don't know. What do you think, Frank?
Frank, I think Nathan puts it perfectly well. The law is wrong, the rule is wrong, because the only way Garcia goes for the ball and plays that ball is because there's the threat of Mbappe. But because Mbappe was offside from the beginning, this should not have gone against Spain, if you see what I mean.
I completely agree with you, especially because he can't analyze, you know, all the situation in that amount of time. Especially Mbappe is behind Garcia, he's behind him, so he cannot know exactly if he's offside or not. Mm. And in fact, we normally judge an offside on the kick from a partner, which is Hernandez at the time. So Garcia is in fact at the termination of the pass. He's not at the beginning of the pass.
Yeah.
So it would have been Garcia who wants to give the ball to the goalkeeper. You can understand easily that it's not an offside. But there, you normally say Mbappe is offside when the ball gets out of Hernandez's boots. He's offside. So why do you go there and say, okay, but Garcia touched the ball, so therefore he puts Mbappe back to the game? No, it's impossible. It doesn't work like that. It's not our football. When you're a defender, you go for it, and you don't think, well, if I touch the ball, the guy will be not offside because he's going to go back to the game. If I don't touch the ball, he's going to be offside. That's insane. That's insane to think that a player can analyze that in such small amount of time, that situation. You have to be a non-football player to put that rule on.
Yes, it's a good take from Frank on Griezmann. Mm-hmm. I don't think the three of them, Benzema, Mbappe and Griezmann, can play great all together.
Yep.
I think one almost has to sacrifice himself for the other two. And I think that one will be Griezmann more often than not.
Yep.
One, because he plays a bit deeper, mm-hmm. and because he's more involved now in the linker play and then give the ball to the front two, who then can do the magic. And also because he defends more, he runs more. You saw again against Spain the work ethic, how he was coming and helped Pogba and helped Tchouaméni and all of that. And he loses a lot of energy to do that. But I mean, Frank is extreme in the sense like he should drop him and maybe not even call him up for now.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the sort of Griezmann dilemma? Because yesterday was his 100th cap.
Yeah, exactly.
He's played the last 57 France game in a row, not even from like starting every single one of them. So yeah, maybe you could do with a little break. But where do you stand on the talent that he has, what he can bring to this team? Is Deschamps using him the best way?
I guess you can't have a little break in international football, because once you're not selected for one window, another window, like, you're done.
Yeah, because every game,
you know, is essential at that sort of level, whether it's a friendly or a qualifier. So, I don't know, it's interesting because you do, it's weird to see him being so good defensively, but then not offering as much offensively. And it doesn't suit my eye, because that's Antoine Griezmann. That's the guy we saw from a few years ago at the celebration. Like, you can't celebrate a slide tackle anymore. You know, it's all about the goals and things like this. So I don't know. It's a shame to see him working like that. But then also, it seems like that's what he wants to do, because he never seems to complain while he's doing it.
No, that's true.
There are so many people who, if they were tasked to do that job, they'd be waving their arms in the air and this, that and the other. But he's committed to trying to win. And at the moment, that's... this is how he's doing it. And I could see the talk of, you know, dropping him, but who could come in at this moment that is going to be unequivocally better for France in that setup? And you're right in saying that the front three don't work well together as an attacking force as such. Because one thing I felt in the game yesterday, as Frank was alluding to, I thought Pogba looked really good.
Yeah.
Like, Pogba near his best, for me, is unplayable. There's no match for him.
Yeah, I agree.
And with that French team, it felt like everything was going to come through him in terms of starting the attacks. And it wasn't Pogba getting it to Griezmann to get it to the front too. It's Pogba looking for absolutely everybody. So I don't know. I think not knowing enough about the players coming in behind Griezmann, I don't know who you can add to that situation that makes them better, because they're finding ways to win with him in there.
Yeah.
And even though you lose that attacking threat, like, seeing, to me, just seeing like Benzema back, and even though, as Frank says, it might be for 30 minutes, that 30 minutes is like, God, that's box office 30 minutes to me. But yeah, I don't know. It's a tough situation to be in, especially because he's so experienced. He's won so much as an individual.
Yeah.
And now he's, you know, one of the main people in the national team as well. But I don't know.
It'd be interesting, because obviously, to go back on Frank's point, against Finland last month, I know it was only Finland, but Griezmann and Benzema played so well together. Mbappe was injured, so he wasn't there. And then we go back, Frankie, to this point of now that Benzema is back, and especially in this kind of form and how decisive he's been and how big he's been, and Mbappe being Mbappe, the one who will always suffer now will have to be Griezmann, right? So if you and Adam are right, let's say we put Griezmann on the bench, I think you bring in another midfielder. So you play Tchouaméni, Pogba and Kanté, or Rabiot, Kanté and Pogba. Or you've got those options, more than just trying to replace Griezmann with another number 10, Oussem Aouar, for example, or I don't know, whoever else. But you go a bit more strengthening your midfield. I still can't see Deschamps dropping Griezmann, though.
No, I know. It's what I would say is, first is his favorite, and he looks like his son, and I can accept that, no problem. And it's true. Nidem is right when he said that he offensively doesn't bring what he should bring, but defensively he's really committed and works very well on what he has to do. But remember Tuchel playing against Tottenham, for those who follow the Premier League, at the Hotspur Stadium. First off, Mason Mount was on the field. They couldn't find a solution. There was, in fact, no games, just a tactic, big tactic. What Tuchel did, put Mount out, put N'Golo Kanté in, 3-0 for Chelsea. So you play more defensively, supposedly, because you put a more defensive player, but you open the space, you better in transition, and you do something different. I really believe that, as you said, with Kanté, Pogba and Tchouaméni in the midfield zone, with Mbappé and Benzema in front, you can open spaces and you can find solutions, and it's going to be big enough to win games. But that's crucial, and I accept that in an international game, if you miss a window, if you miss a cap, you know, maybe somebody else is going to come and it's going to be over. But really, as you said, Griezmann is an offensive player. I don't see the offensive talent that he used to show us anymore. That's my main concern.
Yeah, maybe he's 30 now. Maybe you evolved a little bit, and maybe you play for the team more than for your own stats. Not that he's never really played for his own stats. Do you know what I mean? But maybe you think, you know what, I can be very useful in the link and play, being a bit between the lines. Mm-hmm. I won't score as many. I won't assist as many before. Mbappe and Benzema have something special, clearly. And yesterday, there's no passes between Benzema to Griezmann, for example.
Yeah, I think that's you've summed it up well there, because for Griezmann, he doesn't have to score. I think in times gone by, in teams that he was in, the emphasis was on him to be scoring, him and maybe another. But the ball's in a far different court now. And he understands. And, you know, it's obviously got to be trusted by your manager to have your 100th cap, to have played 50-something in a row. Like, that's at international level. That's huge. So, yeah, I think he understands his role. And France have been successful without him having to score goals. And I'm sure in some ways it can be a hit to your pride, ego and stuff like this. But when you see the way the game finished, and the way they were celebrating, and the fact he was getting involved in the celebrations, like that versus scoring a goal in a loss or whatever, for him, you could see that the winning is the most important thing. And I suppose that's something you realise at the age of 30.
Yeah. So I'm in love with Tchouaméni. I've said it many times before on the show. I think he's going to be an amazing player. Frankie, if you look forward now to the World Cup in 14 months, and we've said before this week how important this week was, because France didn't play well before the Euros. At the Euros, there was that disappointment against Switzerland. After the Euros, it wasn't great. You draw against Bosnia, you draw against Ukraine, you beat Finland, but that was not very good either. This was big because now it looks like they're back on the right path towards the World Cup. If you look forward towards Qatar, they're going to qualify, of course, like all the big countries. But what does your crystal ball tell you, Frankie?
Well, as you said, they're back to their track, and I'm sure they can do well. Now we are more than a year from the World Cup, and everything is possible. Hopefully, and I wish the best for all players. We won't have any injuries, you know, just before the World Cup, and we'll have all the players fit. But there is no doubt, and it was a non-game against Switzerland, but there is no doubt that France is already one of the favorites, if it's not the favorite, of the next World Cup, because with all the talent that you have. But it's always the right balance that you have to find. And it's why we are talking about Griezmann right now. It's why we can talk about some other players. Should they still be there, you know, in a year from now? That's Deschamps' duty, to find the right balance. That is how you're going to find, you know, the guy who can maybe substitute another guy if Mbappé and Benzema is injured and can score goals, like Coman or like Ben Yedder or somebody else, you know. That's the thing he has to find between the 23 or 24 players that he will have to pick, which will make the difference. But definitely, France is back on track, and they're going to be one of the contenders.
Would you hate to play against a team like France, in the sense this French version where they defend well, they're so physical, they're so good with the ball when they want to be, and then they can just pass the ball to Benzema and Mbappé and they do something magic, like Aymeric Laporte yesterday? And for him, it was a special game as well, because obviously there is two countries.
Yeah.
I still think that ideally he would have stayed with France and played with France and start in a game like this instead of Upamecano or Kimpembe or whatever. And he was bitter, maybe he's a bit strong, but he's like, you know what, we were better than them, and then we lost. Courtois said the same after 2018 and a little bit after the game, the semi-final too, where it's like, you know, come on, we play, we have the ball, we play well, we've got the movement, we create a bit more than them, and yet they crucify us with an Mbappé counter-attack or a Benzema incredible goal.
Yeah.
Would it be annoying to play against
a game like 100%, 100%, especially if you're playing for a team like Spain or someone where you can control so much of the game. You go through phases where, like, you should be winning. Should be 1-0, should be 2-0, should be whatever. Then all of a sudden, like, this France team and maybe one or two others, they can flip a switch.
Yeah.
Like, as we saw in the second half in the semi-final, as we saw as soon as Spain scored that goal, like, obviously, the Benzema finish is an incredible finish, but France looked like a completely different team from the moment that happened. So it's always a huge danger. But the thing about that, as we saw in the summer, it's not something which you can rely on all the time. You know, it's great when you have that extra gear, but some of these other teams are capable of being sitting in and around that for most of the time. But for France, like, no matter how the game goes, like, you're looking at the end of that game and Spain are pushing for a goal. And it means that they're leaving one-on-one, 2v2s at the back with Mbappe and Benzema, with Hernandez flying up the side and things like this, and Pogba breaking from midfield. Like, unless you have the right people to match up with those, it's always going to be a nightmare. So if you need to ever throw everything at them, you're leaving yourself incredibly vulnerable. Yeah, but then also, the way that they play overall, they're not really the most open side anyway. So they would be very, very frustrating to play against. And, you know, when things are going well, great. But I think to piggyback on something which Frank said as well, in fact, you said it, I think sometimes teams like this are more dangerous because they're not the ones who will win all the games they should win 4-5, 6-0. But then when it comes up to a team where they have to raise their level to find a result, they seem to be able to win those. And that feels like me, the sort of team that ends up winning tournaments more so than the ones who climb the rankings through the season to then fall short when it's tournament time.
But, like Belgium a little bit. No offense to Belgium or Christian, but Pogba said something very interesting just to finish on France. After the game, he said, yeah, we should do better and we all know it. But if that's the way to win, we're going to keep doing this and win. And I don't think you can blame them for that. Let's show some love to Spain because although it's disappointing for them because they didn't win the Nations League, but Luis Enrique would be happy this morning, right?
Yeah.
He's seen some young talents coming through even more like Gavi, and we're going to talk about Gavi. Frankie, you want to talk about Oyarzabal as well. Collectively, it's impressive the way they play, the way they move the ball. The future is bright, right, for them and for that generation?
Yeah, and for me, it always feels like the future is bright for Spain because whoever's coming in behind plays exactly the same way as the team that's already ahead. They just might be missing, say, a key talent from it or something, but you know that when you see Spain play, he's going to look a certain way.
Mm.
The goalkeeper will be good with his feet. The back line will move the ball. The six, the eight, they'll move the ball. The front line will be doing certain things as well. And they're really, really fun to watch. The only thing that I thought was missing yesterday, especially going through that first 60 minutes, is that when I saw how much they controlled the game, they only had three shots, of which only one was on target. And obviously, games are tight because these are two of the best teams in not just in Europe, but in the world. So the games will be tight, but you expect to see more come from the way that they are moving it. But it's like, as a neutral, I absolutely love that game. That was like prime time European international level football. It was, beautiful. My wife was looking at me as I was just smiling watching the TV. She's like, what's wrong with you? I said, this is what I want to see. All the players all around Spain, somebody's under pressure in the corner, pop, 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 pop. Someone's now flying down the side on the other bit. That's crazy. For me, that style of play is incredible. They've clearly got a very good coach. They have a good belief. They have a core fundamental desire to play in a certain manner. So you know when you go into the team, you know what to expect. And I think, if maybe they would have taken certain chances at certain moments, they're walking away with that Nations League title. And not many people are saying that they didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
So they have to feel confident, especially after having made the semi-final of the Euros.
Yeah.
This Nations League final just come up short. The World Cup's next year with a young squad, and you seem to be just having a conveyor belt of young talent. So why would you not be hopeful?
If you think that Pedri will come back from injury, Dani Olmo will come back from injury, even Jordi Alba to bring a bit of experience to a really young team, you think, wow. Frankie, I know you liked Oyarzabal, not just the goal, but overall he was very good in the semi-final as well against Italy, giving the two goals to Ferran Torres. Is that the one that you're the most keen on?
And with Gabi as well, because it's when he's friend with Spain. You know, we thought it will take a long time. You know, to see them getting back to their best. I think they're not still at their best, but they're very close to and in such a short time. You know, Luis Enrique was capable of getting those players, young players, to something very, very good, and we saw it against Italy. We saw yesterday again, and it's what I liked. I like those young players, those new players. Oyarzabal, I have to say, I discovered him against Italy. Follow more the Premier League and League One. Really, I discovered that player capable of doing everything has been absolutely fantastic, and I want to see more from that team. It's what I liked, the way that they came back to almost their best. What I disliked is, again, you know, it's good to have the ball, to keep the ball, to dominate the game, but at the end of the day, you have to finish the actions. And the goal they scored against France, it's more a vertical action than an horizontal one, where you keep the ball 10 or 20 times to finish the action. It was straight, of course. Upamecano made a mistake, but Oyarzabal were there, and it was really direct. And sometimes they have to go towards that instead of going back to their tiki-taka, which doesn't work anymore. Used to work, but doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
And I have that hope with young players and more experienced players that their game will go towards that, because of their technique, their talent, they can do something even more better.
For Gavi, I mean, he's 17 in 64 days, which is crazy. The most surprising, is it how good he is already, or how much maturity he played with for you, or both? Or is it a combination of both that make those? Because we've, you know, we've seen, Frank and I have seen Mbappe, and when you see the Mbappe for the first time at 16 and whatever it was, you think, okay, you will always remember where you were the mm-hmm. first time. And I think with Gavi, it's very similar.
Yeah.
What amazes you the most?
I think it's both things, as you've said, because one thing about Mbappe, like technique-wise, he's very, very good, but physically he always had that pace. Mm. And if you have the pace at 16, 26, 36, you're always going to have an advantage over many people. Yeah. But looking at Gavi, he doesn't have those physical attributes, but he has the character and the personality to always want the ball. And he knows how to take care of the ball.
Yeah.
And he understands his role within the team. You know, he's not just going around just chasing the ball. He's not going around putting himself in the wrong spots. He's like, football IQ for somebody that young is outstanding. But then, as I say, as well as that, it's his ability to understand when to play, when to move, when to like try and win a free kick, when to give a free kick. And you say he's 17 in 2 months.
So he's 17 in 64 days. Yeah, already.
That's like... That's insane, because when you look at that French midfield, that's a midfield who have the technique, the physicality, yeah. the understanding, but he looks so comfortable within it, and he was linking play so, so well. But then that goes a long way, because the manager knows that play, he trusts that player. Because if you send them out there and they're not ready for it, he would have been absolutely eaten alive.
Yeah.
So that the way he played yesterday, like, that's such a strong statement for Spain, for himself. And most games he's going to play from this point will not be as hard as that one. So credit to him, I think.
And I'm sure Gavi will play many more finals in his career as well.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Why, enough Nations League. What about some quick hits, Nathan?
Yeah, let's go.
It's now done and official. Newcastle have been bought by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. There is a lot of controversy around it, of course, but what do you make of it, Nathan?
In terms of controversy?
In terms of everything you want. Football, controversy, should they be allowed to come into the Premier League?
It's, you know, that's a very, very sticky one, that. But in terms of what is ahead for Newcastle, some people will be very critical of it, but I think it's more so because it's not happening to their club.
Yeah, yeah.
If the shoe was on the other foot,
yeah,
I'm sure they'd be just fine. But yeah, there are certain questions which are in existence, but at the end of the day, the way that I see it, when it's to do with football, when it's to do with large amounts of money, you know, this stuff here seems more openly wrong potentially.
Yeah.
But there are other things which are going on which maybe we don't speak about. But football isn't as pure as we like, and this is a group of people coming in to buy a football club to try and make a difference. And I'm sure the Newcastle fans will be very, very excited, because it's been a long while since they've actually been part of a serious conversation in the Premier League. Would you agree?
Yeah, and you and I, as City fans and PSG fans, we've seen it
exactly.
to a similar level.
Yeah.
I've had friends who didn't want to go to see PSG anymore, who didn't take the season ticket anymore, and I respected that. I saw it, like you said, as a football team. I'm not responsible for who owns my club.
Yeah.
This is a club I supported before with other owners, different ownership, when they were good, when they were bad, when they had money, when they didn't. I'm not going to stop now, but I can see why some people have issues with the Saudis coming to the Premier League, with the track record they've gone on human rights and things like that.
Do you know, like, you're a PSG guy and Man City guy. I wonder if there'll be less heat on our two teams now because it's happened to someone else.
Yeah.
So good luck to Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck with everything.
Exactly.
And also, so Steve Bruce now is under huge pressure. I think they're expecting to sack him pretty soon. Do you think that's the right thing to do?
I think it's not just the right thing to do, I think it is. I don't rate him as a manager.
Okay.
But I think it's inevitable because as a new owner, you come in, it's very rare that you keep the man in place, especially if he's not a big name or doing a great job. Mm-hmm. I think had Newcastle been top of the table right now with Steve Bruce, they probably would have kept him. The fact is they're second from bottom.
Yeah.
They're not playing great. They stayed up last season just about. Mm-hmm. And I can see why I think Steve Bruce himself saw it coming.
Yeah.
And I can see why they think, you know what, for our project, we need someone different. We need a bigger name with maybe more experience, a better manager maybe, and that's no offense to Steve Bruce. Mm. So I'm not shocked. You know, I think, again, that happened to a lot of clubs before. So
it feels to me, though, that whoever comes in is just going to be a stopgap for the next stage anyway.
Probably.
You know what I mean?
Because unless they get who they want right now, like if it's Antonio Conte and they come.
But would he come with the players that they have right now? Because Newcastle might be the richest club in the world. But in terms of their talent at this moment, they're still second bottom in the Premier League. So are you going to bring in a top-tier manager who's not going to be managing a top-tier set of players or a top-tier situation?
Yeah, and also I think big players, big managers want to play in the Champions League or maybe the Europa League. But because when we were preparing for the show, you made a good point off air by saying, how long would it take them to break the top four? Mm. And like when City was bought by Abu Dhabi, not many people had loads of money and could spend big bucks, which they do now. And also the top four maybe at the time was not as strong as it is now. When you look at United, City, Liverpool and Chelsea right now, they're miles better than Newcastle. Not just add Coutinho and we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Add this and this and we'll be fine. I think there's a long way for Newcastle to go to catch those four.
Yeah, and you say that those four, but their nearest targets will probably be Leicester, Arsenal and Tottenham in terms of ambitions. And they also feel like they're a long way away from
even
that
Villa.
At this moment. Exactly, yeah, exactly. So it's things aren't going to be that easy that quickly.
Yeah, you're right. We have, finally, the long list of nominees for the Ballon d'Or this year, 2021. Lionel Messi is the huge favourite.
Okay.
Ahead of Robert Lewandowski. Jorginho is about there. Karim Benzema as well. Who are you rooting for and why, more importantly?
So this, as soon as you mention these names, like it immediately splits opinion, but I'm a Messi guy. So I hope he wins it. I think he's just an incredible player. You know, certain things he was doing last year, as we can see now from this current Barcelona setup, it seems a bit more superhuman now. So I'm rooting for him, but then also like the year Lewandowski had, like spectacular.
And breaking the record and all
exactly.
of that.
If Lewandowski ends up winning it, then you know you hold your hands up and you can't really argue against it. But just from a purely emotional standpoint, I'm definitely a Messi guy. How about you?
Yeah, I think Messi will win. I think there's the Copa America as well, and him waiting so long to finally win something with the country and what he meant. I mean, you know what I'm going to say now. Kareem the Dream!
You never know. You never know.
But this is Benzema's year, man. Magic. Magic in his feet.
Anyway, you did mention South America there. And Brazil drew 0-0 with Colombia. But Neymar said in an interview that he doesn't want to play again for Brazil.
Yeah.
I'm guessing, is this for Brazil or is this just in a World Cup after 2022?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, so that would be his last World Cup. I would think this would be it.
Actually, I'm thinking, is that last World Cup or last appearance for Brazil?
He said last World Cup, but he felt when you watched the interview that he meant after the 2022 World Cup, I'm done for international football, which one I don't believe will happen. He might say now. Messi said many times, I'm done now with Argentina, I've had enough.
Yeah.
You know, and then ever come back and came back to great things in the Copa America we've just discussed. But on the other hand, I can see what Neymar is tired because I think the pressure, and I'm not trying to find him excuses of why he never won the World Cup with Brazil when they could have and everything. I just think since he was maybe 15, the pressure has been so huge on him. The expectations, you should take this team and win like Pelé, like Ronaldo, like this, like that, and you're not good enough, and then you do this and you do that, and you don't do this and you don't do that, and some of the criticism that he's been under, I think some of the weight that he's been under at times, he's 28, 29 now, soon, he'll be like, you know what, I'm done here, I've had enough. So maybe he sees 2022 as, okay, let's see, we've got Chichi, really good manager, we've got a really good generation coming through, this is our chance, we win this, and after that, I'm done.
Is he, he's on track to potentially be the record goal scorer leading up to that tournament, isn't he?
Yeah.
So do you think that's another reason why he's thinking about stopping?
Maybe once he beat Pelé's record, then after that, he thinks, you know what, I'm done here.
Yeah, it's funny though, the way football works, you could break Pelé's record, but it's still like, but you're not as good as Pelé. It's just the way it works, isn't it?
Exactly.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
England destroyed Andorra 5-0 on Saturday with probably a C team, Nadem. Mm-hmm. We didn't learn much, but what would you like to put forward?
Yeah, so they've got a strong C team.
Yeah, very strong.
That's a positive in itself, because you like to think that means that there's more competition for places. But, you know, it's a game against Andorra. More likely than not, people weren't really tuned in to watch it. They weren't seeing any sort of tactical breakdowns, analysis of key performers and stuff like this, because the game itself is a different type of test on the international level. But to give them credit, they didn't concede. They scored that many goals. They got people a run out. There's a confidence that's high there. There's good energy in the camp. So it's a positive. And I always think of it this way. Sometimes when someone says, you know, what's the point? There's nothing to be gained. There is something to be lost. If that game finishes 5-1, 5-2, or Andorra do something, then it's the end of the world. So realistically for me, like you've been very professional on the road.
Yeah, that's what we ask for in a game like this against such a little opposition.
Yeah, for sure. And anyway, so Italy finished third in the Nations League after beating Belgium in the third and fourth place playoff. And Thibaut Courtois didn't want to play in the game before. And afterwards, he said that players are playing too many games. Do you think he's got a good point there?
So I think he's got a point certainly on that third and fourth place playoff. I mean, come on, what's the point? I mean, I thought he was very blunt and said, like, you know, this game is, he said, pointless, which I think is a fair point. We don't need to know who's third and fourth in the Nations League, do we?
Well, there's a fixture booked in for that day to be played.
For the cash, you know that.
To be played. Every game's for the cash, Jules. If we're going to be cynical, let's be all the way cynical.
Very true.
So if you didn't make it to the finals, does that mean you just go home and you do nothing? Because it's a Nations League tournament for four people.
I get that.
You know, like there's a fixture supposed to be there. People want to go and watch those teams. Like for me personally, if I was over, I would like to have watched all the games. I would have liked to have seen a third versus fourth. But I don't know. Okay.
I give you that. Okay. Third and fourth, why not? The children like it. Although both teams played not their strongest team.
Okay.
So, you know, that's even managers clearly thought, let's try different.
So why did people play the stronger team for the other game? Because it's still a game on a certain day.
Yeah, but it's the final. So you actually win a trophy, you lift it. And as I remind you,
not everybody can win a trophy.
That's true. That's very true.
But how would this tournament be if the team that qualified for the last four was a team which wasn't one of the main powerhouse nations? Maybe a team that's coming through the different groups.
Yeah.
And they made it to the third, fourth place playoff. Do you think they'd change their team and say it's too many games?
No, I think they'd be accepted. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Maybe it's because they were big teams. Mm. Maybe it was because it was big teams. But I also think he's got a point on the amount of games. And we know that from 2024, we'll have a new calendar, whether it means World Cup every 2 years or not. There's still a long way to go. But I think they have to do something on those international windows, the games that they played. Mm-hmm. Look at in South America, they will play on Thursday night, which means that all those players cannot play at the weekend because they come back either in France or in Spain or in England on the Friday evening or some maybe even later. You think like, okay, at some point, common sense has to prevail because it's to the detriment of the players' health and I think of the spectacle as well. So that's the thing.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but maybe some of this is due to the pandemic season that we've just had. Maybe things will level out in the future, but who knows?
Germany did the job against Romania last week and can qualify tonight. We record this on Monday night against North Macedonia for the World Cup. But Hansi Flick has to come out and defend Timo Werner again against criticism. Do you understand why he's such a divisive figure, Timo Werner? Even in Germany, they either like him or slaughter him. And I feel it's a bit the same here when he's at Chelsea.
I think as a striker, you're going to be judged. This is the stats era, but then there's also the eye test. And overall, he doesn't necessarily pass the eye test of everybody because it's not like he has, say, great technique or like he's a very good player, but he's not got the finesse levels of other players who play that position. So then you go to stats. And if you're not scoring week in, week out, then questions will be asked of you because he's a striker for Chelsea and he's a striker for Germany. These are two of the powerhouse teams within their own sort of worlds. So if you're playing and you're not really contributing from that standpoint and you see the potential for other players to be playing, like the criticism's going to be there. And I think you'd be more alarmed if the criticism wasn't there because you'd be asking, well, why why does nobody care that their striker's not scoring goals? So. You know, like, I don't know. Like, but the thing, it's gone so far now and for so long, I don't think even a good run of form will be able to bail him out in this conversation.
Yeah.
I think people's minds are being made up about him based on what's going on now. And he could score for a month, 2 months straight, but as soon as he stops scoring, that's the conversation back in again. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I just wonder how much that's an issue for him. I don't know if he watches TV, if he's aware of all the criticism, if he reads the newspapers or not. But I hope for you, Timo, you're not. But he's still a young player that can improve, and certainly Flick has faith in him, otherwise he would not play him. So that's the only thing. I think there's a point where criticism is so counterproductive for a player that, I just hope that it's not a problem more than anything else.
Yeah, and I agree with that, because criticism can be so, so bad, but the criticism isn't coming from the people who are around
you.
It's people from the outside. But the danger of that is there are more people from the outside than there are around you. And you mentioned TV, you mentioned newspapers, but all it is, it's social media. It's walking
down the
street.
Did you used to read stuff and did you pay attention
when I was young,
to
when
what?
I was younger, yeah. When I was younger, yes. As I got older and the sort of football became more expansive and everybody had an opinion, right, left and centre, then no, the biggest thing was the fact that you'd be entrusted by your teammates, being selected by your manager. But that must be a very, very tough position to be in. And you could see at times, like, I think it was a chance which he missed last year. And then he went back to Chelsea and he was working on finishing that exact chance. But that chance is a once in a moment thing, you know. And for somebody's confidence to be like that, for me, I think he can get out of it. I think he's a very good player. But I think the key to it is to keep him playing. Because if you take him out, he seems like the type of player who could be broken from that.
Yeah, definitely.
But we'll see. But anyway, PSG news. I don't know if this, what's the phrase? Is it vrai or faux?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true or false, but Marco Verratti says he wants to finish his career at PSG. Is this somebody you'd like to see stay there for the duration of his career?
I think he would be already a club legend. And I explain why. He arrived in 2012 when he was only 18 from Pescara. I'd never played in Serie A before. He was in Serie B for, I think, 10 or 11 million euros, which at the time maybe looked a bit, wow, it's a lot of money for an 18-year-old who'd never played in Serie A. But, I mean, he was worth every penny. What I love the most, apart from the clearly amazing player that he is, and if he'd been not so much injury prone, I think he would be even better. And I've had, it's just that he's such a different... I mean, he drinks, he smokes, he parties.
Okay.
After the City win, he then played for a month. He trained twice. He had cramps and everything, but yet he found the energy to go clubbing with Neymar and Mbappe until 6 a.m.
You find the energy for that, yeah.
I just love that. I think he's such a legend.
Yeah.
And yeah, of course, you could say, what if he had the lifestyle of Cristiano? Would he be the best midfielder in the world? Because he would have so much discipline off the field. I don't know, but then you could say the same about Ronaldinho. Loads of players, you could say if they didn't go clubbing so much or not eat anything they want, maybe they would have been a better career. I don't know if Verratti would be a better player. Maybe not. I just love the way he is. I would not change him for anything. I wish that he was not so much injured, of course. But I just think he's such a legend that he can stay and live at the Parc des Princes for all his life if he wants, with his wife and his children. I would be happy with
that. You know, I didn't even realize that he's been there for 9 years already.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that. But then obviously it's like, I can't associate him with any other team. So yeah. And also the stuff you say about living the life like Ronaldo, that life for Ronaldo suits Ronaldo, brings the best in him. And like when I heard the story from Grant, the United third goalkeeper, when he said there was that day where everybody was gathered around and Ronaldo didn't have any dessert, so nobody had dessert. Listen, I've seen plenty of good players that have dessert. So if you want to be happy and play your best and you want dessert,
you can have chocolate.
Go have your dessert. You'll be just fine.
It's not just the race for the Ballon d'Or that we mentioned earlier,
Ned.
It's also the Copa Award, which is the Ballon d'Or for young players. That looks super interesting as well, with a lot of talent there. Who would you have? There's Bellingham for you, there's Saka, there's Greenwood, if we look at the English boys. You can have Pedri, you can have Jorena, you can have a lot of really, really talented kids. Who would you pick?
I think this one feels like it's going to be quite unanimous. In Pedri.
Yeah, I agree.
That's how I feel right now, because those other players, they're very, very good players, very talented. But, like, Pedri barely missed a game last year. I think for some of these other people, to a certain extent, like, there's selection questions and so on. Like, Pedri's playing every game for Spain in the tournament in the summer.
I know. Euros and Olympics. And,
exactly. And the Olympics, and playing every game for Barcelona. And, like, that rise was, it was outrageous because he wasn't just in there because there was nobody else available. Come the end, like, that's his spot. That's Pedri's spot. And for somebody who's so young to be doing it for Barcelona, to be doing it for Spain, who are two, like, storied football teams, for me, I think it kind of speaks for itself. But, like, the talent is there for other people. But, yeah, Pedri just stands out by a mile when you look at some of the names involved.
Do you know what I like about him is that he came from the second division. Because the others, they've been, you know, Bellingham has played at 16 for Birmingham in the Championship. And then you could see the progress at Dortmund the first season and all of that. Pedri went from Las Palmas second division to Barcelona, starting, playing every single game, going to the Euros, going to the Olympic Games. You just think, like, wow, incredible.
Yeah, for
incredible
sure.
Incredible time.
For sure. So, Xavi has opened the door to Barcelona if... What's the phrase? I know his name's Ronald Koeman, but you call him what?
The Dutch guy, you mean? I don't know his name.
So if Ronald Koeman sacked, do you like this option? And do you think it's the right sort of fit for Barcelona?
So I was waiting for Xavi to actually say what he said. I think it was yesterday or Sunday or Saturday, saying, like, I would look at every offer. If an offer comes, I would study. He's obviously at Al Sadd now in Qatar. But it looked like he was okay. Show me, give me something, Laporta, and then I'll take it. There's no way he can turn down Barcelona again like he did a few months before under the previous president. So I would welcome him. I think he's the right guy for now. I don't like the Dutch guy, as you know, and all the listeners and all the viewers know. He's not my cup of tea. And I think he's done enough for that club, not in the best of ways. And if you want this transition to work and to go forward and to look forward, you need someone like Xavi to take over.
But you said for now, though. For now is alarming to me. Because you think he's just a stopgap before they get somebody else?
No, because I think now you need someone who will have the DNA of this club, who will understand it more than the Dutch guy, and who can take this team forward for years to come. And I think Xavi is perfect for that. I don't know if he's ready. I don't think he knows if he's ready because his only experience as a manager is in Qatar. But at least, even when you see Al Sadd play, you go, okay, this is the Cruyff DNA. This is the Barca DNA. I mean, the way they move the ball, and albeit in that league, okay. But bring him in, you know, and there's no pressure because it's transition years.
It's amazing how quickly you can find Al Sadd clips when the manager of Barcelona is struggling.
Of course, you know? Of course it is.
Up until this point, I'd never seen a single one. Then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, well, here's like the clip. This is what you could have won. Now picture this with a Barcelona team. But yeah, there we go.
I know. Sticking with Barcelona, Nathan, Joan Laporta revealed in an interview this weekend that he wished Leo Messi had offered to play for free when there was this issue with his contract before going to PSG, so he could have stayed at the club. Are we living in like a Care Bear world? What's going on?
Okay, so let me be very, very stern and forthright about this. Like, this is my stance on this whole situation, yeah. Like, I understand that Messi and Ronaldo have earned more money in football than anybody else in history. Yeah. More money than probably 75% of all pro footballers across Europe combined. Yes. If Lionel Messi plays football and is not paid, there is no other footballer on this planet that should be asking for a salary. I'll tell you that as a matter of fact, because he's like Ronaldo and so on, they're not like everybody else.
Yeah,
they're different. They're the definition of the game. Like, you could be watching wherever they go in the world, if somebody knows football, it's likely they'll know Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
There should be no expectation that somebody should play for free because they have an affinity to a club. They're professionals. If you want to play for free, get rid of your professional status and go and play as an amateur.
Yeah, exactly.
Tons of fields, even close to this to the studio right now. Go play there. But like I say, if Lionel Messi plays football for free, everybody else should just rip up their contracts because if he doesn't deserve to be paid, then the whole game's gone.
This movement could start now, you know. I think
everyone would be hoping and praying Messi says he's not going to play for free. It's the same as like when Ronaldo says he's not going to have the dessert. Everyone will say, this is the thing now. So yeah, it's probably not the one for me. Not the one for me. Right. So anyway, Rui Costa has been elected as the new Benfica president. Jules, he is a club legend.
Yes, he is.
Is that a good idea to bring someone in like that?
It is, because if you know a bit the story, Luis Felipe Vieira, the former president, who is in all sorts of trouble, went to jail before being released, but has been charged for fraud and money laundering and everything you want. Some crazy stories coming out of Benfica when it's such a huge club as well. So he had to go, he went, after being at the club, I think, since 2002 or something like that. Last season was a bad season for them. They finished third, which was the worst since 2009. And I think you needed someone new. Not that Rui Costa is different, as in he's going to do something different, but certainly you need a bit of serenity back, I think, and the club. And because he's a club legend, he was there, as he mentioned yesterday, after being elected, you know, I started as a ball boy at 7 years old. And I think he understands this club. He knows how much the academy means to the club, and maybe retaining those huge talents a bit longer. Yeah, of course, then you sell them for a lot of money, and that's what you do, João Félix, Rubén Dias, all of that. But keep them for a bit longer to have more success, to do well in the Champions League, and then you can sell. And then with that money, bring more money into your academy. So that, of course, reducing the amount of players that they've got in their staff, in the squad, because the former president was crazy with some of the money they invested. But yeah, Rui Costa, I think it's always good, you know, if you love a club, to see one of your club's legend coming back, caring for the club, coming to put things right and helping the club that has given him a lot at the beginning, and now he can give some of that back.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's one thing about club legends. They represent, to me, like, as a fan, you feel like they're like you.
Yeah.
So if somebody like you is working to make the club better for everybody, it's the perfect spot, isn't it?
I'm with you. Tottenham sporting director Fabio Paratici says that Harry Kane loves Spurs and that he's a key part in their rebuild of the team. Is that simple? That's it? You kiss and make up and then
the rebuild?
Good?
What are they rebuilding from?
From being seventh in the Premier League, trying to get to fourth, I guess, rebuild the team.
But when did they start to decline? Like, what changed? Have they sold someone? Has someone of significance left or whatever? Or am I missing something?
Maybe Pochettino, they say that, has started rebuild.
It's an interesting one. Spurs are a very, very interesting football club. They've got so much potential and, like, you know, they've not won anything for 13 years now. But they've been in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
And they probably deserve more from it when they played against Liverpool just a couple of years ago. But in terms of players saying they love the club, part of the rebuild, words are words, aren't they? Like, something.
He has to say that, I guess.
You have to. Imagine if you said that he hates the club, but he's happy to be part of the rebuild. You know, it's not. It doesn't quite have the same sort of ring to it, does it?
That's true.
But he's... Everyone knows Harry Kane. Like, he's a big part of Spurs' history. You know, he's one of their own, as the fans would say. But I think... If Spurs are continually not part of the conversation in the Premier League in terms of being one of the best teams, me personally, I'd question his ambition if he chooses to stay and just says he loves the club. Because these, like, careers, they don't last forever.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't wait for something to get better, especially when you look around you and teams are going in a certain direction. And those players they're playing for those teams, they're not all from the academy. They've not all played there for 10 years.
Yeah, for sure.
But when you retire, like, for someone that's as good as Harry Kane, I think you'd love to have some sort of honours in there. So if Spurs aren't doing it for me, then...
And if he wanted to leave last summer, for him to want to stay, something would have had to change, to make his mind change, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, maybe that was just a bid not coming in.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But I don't know. It was a very, very interesting summer. And I think from the Man City perspective, the way they're being judged now, I think the issue is the fact that people almost had it like Kane was in the team.
Yeah.
Like, they looked at some picture online and they digitally put Harry Kane's head on a City shirt and, like, simulated some goals and thought, well, yeah, Harry Kane's doing great for City and City have lost him. But yeah, I don't know. But the way football is, anything's possible. Even if he says he's happy, you know, anything is possible.
That's true.
But anyway, Marcus Rojo, the former Manchester United and Argentina defender, has been making headlines, Jules, but not for the right reasons.
Not really. We all know Marcus Rojo, if you remember him from his time with Argentina in the Premier League. A bit of a loose cannon, I think we can put it that way. He had his moments. Well, he plays for Boca Juniors now. They were in the Copa Libertadores against Atlético Mineiro from Brazil. Didn't really go their way, and there was a bit of controversy with the referee. So they had a huge, like, brawl in the dressing room, the tunnel, the punches, and he threw. So he just got 5-game ban. Just five, to be fair. Got off lightly there. And 15K fine.
Okay.
Which is, you know, what you do when you're not happy with the results. So it's good to see that Marcus Rojo hasn't lost...
Passion.
Passion, exactly.
Passion, that's what we'll call it. And
exactly.
The moral of the story here, referees, they're the problem.
Yeah, of course. Of course, they are. Well, Nathan, it was an absolute pleasure to have you with us.
For me, it was an honour.
It was an honour being alongside you, and it was an honour filling in for Gab Markotti. Pleasure. You can come back anytime. That's all we have time for today. We'll be back, of course, on Thursday. Gab will be back from his little holiday. So make sure you join us as well on Thursday.